Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
You are listening live to the program.
Brought to you by Wirth Harley-Davidson. Online at WirthHarley-Davidson.com for new and used bikes. And bike nights every Thursday night at I-29 and Tiffany Springs. Why the hell not? You're worth it.
Your teams, your town, your program.
I would argue that I need to be here. And this is going to take longer than I intended it to, but that's okay. I'm just going to give you the visuals and hope we don't get Nick Castellanos and somebody hits a home run to tie the game right now. Of course. My goodness.
The only thing that you want to see is guys making sure that they continue to play with the effort that we expect them to play with. And then when it's all said and done, we'll coach it up on tape and just clean it up. So today we didn't have a very good day, but I'll have an opportunity to really evaluate it once we go in there and take a look at it on tape. I truly believe that Tyreek can run. When we start talking about these legends, I'm going to err on the legend, and I love Tyreek, okay? But I'm going to err on the Olympic gold medalist, you know what I mean?
And now, just hoping he doesn't get Nick Castellanos, Joshua Briscoe.
Right you are, Kay. It is no Petro, but the program here for another day of these dulcet tones here for your 2-6. I'm Joshua Briscoe alongside the one and only Curtis Siebel, Jed Marshall on the other side of the glass, and I lost all the audio on my headphones for a second there, and then it came back. Not your fault, Jed. Not your fault at all. It just happened over here, and there's this, you know, we have this headphone jack that says do not unplug, but every single show the host has to sit down and plug in and unplug their headphones.
You don't just want to have just a lone pair of headphones for everybody?
I think even if we did have that, that would have gone away as we were doing radio during the, you know, in the teeth of a global pandemic. I think that probably would have been the time we stopped sharing headphones.
Or when anyone would have stolen them after a day and a half. We only have the one pair. Well,
that's
those,
right.
They're gone.
I saw Mick Schaefer leaving from his time on the zone here today, and it reminds me of the fact that I think on more than one occasion, Mick ended up with two pairs of headphones in his bag, both the ones that he bought and the ones that he accidentally stole. May not have been in there for very long. I don't know. Maybe he returned the stolen goods soon. Not everyone has, though. These headphones have a way of the shared headphones have a way of growing legs and walking around, which is why whenever we, you know, stream any of these shows, or if you are, you know, are watching in the morning on 38 The Spot, you might see label maker last names on the headphone cups because no one else around here can be trusted with another person's headphones. That is one
and,
of the core
and the names
here.
Never match the head that they're on.
They do for me because these,
for me.
I don't like it. But I can't even just put them in the office. I can't even put them in a secret drawer because there is always a chance that in the darkest hours of the weekend or desperation at night, someone starts rummaging around for a pair of headphones without some ears to sit on. And I do not ever want those to be anyone else's ears with my headphones. I am a jealous lover in terms of my headphones. I'm also kind of a psychopath. I don't want somebody else's ear dirt on my headphone cups. Yeah, I think I used to be a germaphobe, and I think now I've evolved into just straight on weird person. But you know, Jed and I had this whole conversation yesterday. Does radio attract weirdos, or do you become weirder in radio? I think the answer is probably both. Yeah, I think that's right. I think that it attracts weirdos, and then you know we all just sort of nurture our weirdest deficiencies over the course of many, many years. I just had a fly land on my screen as well.
A fly land on my face a minute ago. We have one fly. He seems to be unstoppable.
If he touches my headphones, I'm going to lose it.
See? Flies notoriously have cruddy ears.
I will tell you this. If this fly... I'm glad to know that we're on the same page here, Curtis.
Yes.
this fly is going to be here for this opening segment, and then the entire first commercial break is going to be all about getting this fly out of our hermetically sealed studio.
I can help also because I will go in there and smoke a cigarette, so we'll have to have the door open at least for a while.
Could you just blow some cigarette smoke at the fly and just see if we can just sort of shoo it out, maybe get a little nicotine in there? I don't know what happens to flies with nicotine. Dosage has to be crazy, though, at that point. So either this entire show will become about that fly, or we'll get rid of it next commercial break. But I was listening to all of the Chiefs press conferences today, and I also watched the entirety of yesterday's Royals game. And literally, 10 minutes before the show started, I had this thought, and I think that today may actually be a monumental day on the calendar, because I think today is the day. I think today is the day that a totally middle-of-the-road, totally forgettable Chiefs training camp day fully takes the lead over an actual Royals baseball game. And I think it only is today because so far we've had relatively interesting training camp stuff, right? Mm-hmm. We've had the people getting there. We've had some interesting press conferences. And we're going to hear from Eric Bieniemy in a minute. And Andy Reid was on NFL Network, and he had some interesting stuff. But today was pretty much, with the one note being, the most important note is that Juan Thornhill left with a groin injury and reportedly walked back up the hill on his own. So keep an eye on that, because I think this defense is significantly better when he's healthy. But with that being the one exception of just like a piece of news, there were a couple little things here and there. We can either get into the minutia of a very average day of training camp, or we can get into the minutia of a truly, at the very least, minus one swing, irredeemably boring Royals game. And not just that the game wasn't fun to watch, which it wasn't, but also that there are no consequences to take except maybe Edward Oliveira should stop being sent back to Omaha. Maybe he should just get this shot, let him play your right field the rest of the season with Jorge Soler out of here. Edward Olivares is the only thing that happened yesterday that I am going to think about one more nanosecond after today's game, unless Brad Keller's injury is worse than it looks. And that is why yesterday was a miserable baseball day.
This just did. Edward Olivares has been sent down to Omaha.
God, can you imagine? He's got to start playing worse than major league level to stay here.
This guy's just too good.
He's simply too good to be on this roster. But really, it was just Brad Keller had some lower back tightness. Juan Thornhill had a groin injury. There are your two news issues from both teams. And I'll tell you what, man, I would rather talk about Noah Gray dropping passes and Patrick Mahomes' interceptions to the linebackers than I would to try to explain that I give a bleep about one inning of Josh Staumont or what Whit Merrifield did or what Carlos Santana did hitting 1-2 on a team that neither of them should still be on because they're not going to play meaningful baseball with this team anytime soon. Here's the other thing. Here's what made it worse, Curtis. Here's what made the baseball worse. First of all, I did forget that it was on. So I said that I watched the whole thing, and I got in it partway through the first inning because Jed had just called me and reminded me, oh yeah, the Royals are playing now. The Blue Jays, as they continue to hit dingers and be a fun team, they've got the suit jacket that's got all the
it's home run jacket.
Yes, their home run jacket. Yeah. And I just saw that, and look. Has the
they mock their starting pitcher as he climbs the mound. It's kind of fun.
It's great. There is an energy about the Blue Jays, and also it's their first games back in Toronto in a year and a half, 2 years almost. So maybe there's a little extra energy there. But man, they seem fun, and this is not like a big. I'm not gonna say. And Mike Matheny doesn't have enough fun. I'm not gonna do that. I don't really think that's. I'm not gonna do that. But watching the Blue Jays simply have fun playing. Good baseball. They're not overwhelming, but they're a good baseball team with fun personalities and good hitters. And it just seemed like they were enjoying the sport of baseball. And I was jealously watching them have fun because I just don't feel like the Royals have that energy very much anymore. And it's because they're losing. They are losers.
That's a large part of it.
That is sort of undeniable at this point. Whit Merrifield is excellent, but he doesn't necessarily exude, wearing something silly in the dugout,
He's not the life of the party.
Salvi has that. But he's surrounded by a bunch of guys who are, businesslike or whatever, and that's fine when you're winning, but boy, does it just turn to sand in your mouth whenever the team stinks. So that's... That's why I think I am making today the day.
There has never been an exciting crappy team.
No, there are young crappy teams that you can see growing, you know? Mm-hmm. So not fun maybe, but at least interesting.
Yeah.
Where you see the youthful exuberance or whatever, they get squashed by losing a little bit. They find themselves again. You say, you know what? This dude's not here right now. But another year or two of development. If Bobby Witt Jr. and Nick Prado were both on this team right now, the team would still be bad, but it would certainly be more interesting. And right now, I'm just bored by the Royals, which works out okay because even though in a totally middling day of Chiefs training camp, I'm more interested in what happened there. So I don't know if I can make a decree while Seren's on vacation, but my hunch here is to decree today to be the first day of 2021 where actual Royals games get overrun by a totally forgettable Chiefs training camp practice.
Today, if it officially became football season.
I think so.
They moved to the top.
I think so. The fly is on your shirt, and I just so distracted.
And then he moved to a different part of my shirt. Like, yeah, when I went to swat him away, he didn't even like fly away. He just went to a different part of the
he
shirt.
He just walked around the back.
Yeah, I'm over here. Hey, here I am.
But yeah, I think that is
the
it.
The fly
I think
is more exciting than the Royals were this weekend.
Absolutely.
With the exception of Daniel Lynch's performance on Friday night.
Yes. And even that was sort of, and that's a good point. That was after the show on Friday, so I guess I can give it the credit. But like even for him, and that outing was sort of scary, sort of a little bit hectic, but still very good. It wasn't as excellent as his first start back.
Pretty nice.
Absolutely.
Fans going bonkers.
The first game back. Absolutely. So yeah, and so whenever Daniel Lynch is pitching, you can find a little bit of that. Brad Keller, I think, to some extent, can have a little. He has long-term implications. Mm-hmm. But whenever he goes out in the third inning with a back strain or back soreness or whatever,
there goes the juice.
There's nothing. Edward Olivares.
And they really
is,
didn't come close to
no,
that guy.
No, it was just not. It was significantly more fun to watch from the Blue Jays' perspective, I'm sure. But watching it as a Royals pundit in some regard, not enjoyable, which has been the case for the grand majority of the baseball they've played this year. But I was especially hit by it yesterday when I was just like ready to do something else. I was rooting for the game to be over because nothing interesting was happening. With that being said, there were a couple of things from Chiefs camp today. We'll get to some of that audio here in a little bit. But again, Juan Thornhill leaving with a groin injury, I do think is very much worth monitoring. So far, you've seen, you know, Travis Kelce left with the back and hip tightness. Anthony Hitchens left with a hamstring issue. Most of these things so far have been handled as being not particularly major. If you get carted up the hill, I'm inclined to believe there's something more significantly wrong. If you walk back up the hill, especially if we're talking groin, hamstring, knee, back, whatever, to go back up the hill to go get your treatment, which if you haven't been out there, the players walk up and down a relatively long and not incredibly steep hill, but it's something you would not force an injured player to walk up whenever you could have a cart just drive you back up that hill. Finding most of those things to be relatively minor so far, I'm holding out hope there on Juan Thornhill. But even before the injury, here's the thing that concerns me. Even before the injury, he was still getting some reps behind Dan Sorensen and in a role that Thornhill is more equipped for, a better fit for, clearly to me is when the defense is at its best, is whenever he's either the single high guy or playing more of that sort of traditional free safety role. Spags has guys move around all the time, so just calling anyone a free safety or a strong safety is silly. But, you know, for the sake of simplicity, that is the spot where not only where Thornhill is at his best, but it's also when the defense is at its best. And so the combination now of Thornhill was already getting sort of second team reps for the most part, it seemed. Now it's second team reps, and he's going to have to probably take off at least a couple days, you would think, to nurse that. You don't want to force him back into action in training camp, but
that's an injury that
concerns me.
It's similar. It's like the cousin of the hamstring. You're never really
right.
Quite sure that it's back fully. So that's that one they may give a little bit more time to make sure on.
And
yeah, when you've got ground to make up and you've got an injury, that just puts you that much further behind. I think eventually, I think when they leave camp, he'll be the starter. But it's he had some work to do, and now there's probably a week or 3 or 4 days where he won't be able to get that work done. He'll be right where he was, if not a little further behind, when he does come back.
And the issue there is, for me, that Thornhill doesn't have to show me anything else as a player to for me to see it to be evident that he should be playing over Dan Sorensen. But even today, so with Anthony Hitchens and Ben Neiman both not practicing today, by the way, we're going to spend some time talking about the linebackers. But with both of them not practicing, the middle linebacker to start today was not Nick Bolton, a rookie in the middle of a defense. Obviously, you see the issue there. You need to have a command of the playbook. And the Chiefs don't believe that Bolton does. I can say that confidently because the middle linebacker today was Darius Harris. Now, if you forgot that Darius Harris was on the roster, I'll forgive you because he's like linebacker 6 probably or maybe even 7. But Spags had some amount of greater confidence that in the middle of the defense, calling the shots, making sure people were lined up, that he would rather have Darius Harris in there right now than Nick Bolton right out of the gate. Now, look, this is not an indictment on Nick Bolton. He's been a Chief, you know, in actual practices, maybe two, you count on two hands at this point. With all the rookie camps, probably not quite. But, you know, he has barely gotten to town, essentially, in terms of learning Spagnuolo's defense. But the tie goes to the veteran on the Spag side of things. It is Ben Neiman playing over Willie Gay. It's Darius Harris today starting there over Nick Bolton. And Bolton still got plenty of work. But it's Sorensen over Thornhill. And so my concern is that depending on how much time Thornhill misses, and because he remember, Thornhill was up there with the rookies because he was rehabbing the knee still a little bit. And so whenever I was up there last weekend, like I got to ask, hey, how do you feel about being the veteran of this group with these young guys? You are the signal caller. You are the old man in the secondary with again, almost all rookies around him. And he said, I love it. He said, I love being able to be that guy. In fact, he told a whole story about how Spags and he thinks that Spags sort of conspired with him, with Matthew, against him in his rookie season a little bit to tell, he thinks Spags told Matthew to not say anything through a walkthrough to force Thornhill
to make the call. Out the place,
yeah, and so I thought that that story was awesome.
I can absolutely see happening.
Absolutely, that's one of the things. Whenever we get to talk to Spags, I'm sure
you train someone that they don't really know until they have to do it. And when you have to do something like that, your attention level to everything else that goes around you goes up.
And Thornhill said from that point on, he was much more loud in practices and in walkthroughs and making the calls even in games.
A big movement in his maturity as a leader.
And so I think that Spags has seen, since I think presumably late-ish in his rookie season, or at least somewhere in his rookie season, he said, he has seen that in Thornhill. So I think that he wants to see that built up. My only sort of like relatively low-level concern right now, the fly is killing me.
Oh, I know.
It's just buzzing around
here.
He's
all on me.
I
probably should have showered today.
The reason that I don't have it landing on me is not because I smell amazing, although of course I do. It's because I talk with my hands so much. There's no place to land.
I'm not getting there.
It's like an elephant's tail. You just can't. I'm just flapping around. My low level concern right now is that if Thornhill is not practicing in camp, that he loses an opportunity to earn even more faith from Spags that he can command the defense. So again, low level concern, but just something to keep in mind. I got another low level concern for you on the other side of the ball here in a second, but
it's just a little flag.
It's just something to keep in mind.
Planting a flag, putting a pin in it, as I say.
You should not take anything from August 2nd as a definitive opinion on any player on the team.
No,
or
I
anyone.
Totally disagree with that. this is where you make the definitive statements about a player.
You have to say right now, Willie Gay is a Hall of Famer and Nick Bolton is a bust. So you have to establish that now. But, like, you know, again, so Bolton doesn't get the middle linebacker start in the absence of Hitchens and Neiman. And so I think it kind of that very much, I think, for me, reestablishes my expectation that he will not be this team's middle linebacker by choice this year, even late in the season. I think that it's going to be Hitchens just because I've seen Spags give the tie to the vet, or even if it's a close race, it goes to the veteran more than it'll ever go to the young gun, because you're trying to establish the faith in the rookies behind you. You're establishing that you actually do have full trust that they're going to be where the defense tells them to be and then do what they do. There's more complexities in there than I think we usually give defense credit for. But with that being said, that race will continue to be interesting. And it seems like Willie Gay, who was kind of the poster child for a lot of that stuff yesterday, he was apparently has continued to impress across camp so far. Even Tyrann Mathieu earlier tweeted, I think it was, I will quote him directly here because I don't want to misquote Tyrann Mathieu. It was, "Willie Gay, period. That's the tweet." That makes me feel pretty good. That's a pretty good. A pretty good public endorsement from Tyrann Mathieu. And Willie Gay had an interception today and has apparently been flying around. But to get on the field, I think I said this on Friday also, paraphrasing Seth, our friend Seth Kaiser. You have to be this tall to ride. You have to be this tall for playing time, mm-hmm. bar across the team. And, you know, I don't think that Willie Gay, in Spagnuolo's mind, really hit that bar, at least until late in the season last year. And then he got injured, and maybe we lost an opportunity to see him end up being a bigger part of the defense. And hopefully, and right now, and it seems like it's going in the right direction for Willie Gay.
This is kind of the guy you're seeing now that we thought we'd see more of earlier in the year. And
yeah.
he talked last week about the difficulty and the difference of just the things he weren't able to do last year because of COVID and not being able to get on the field as much, and that this was night and day. And we've seen the physical tools and spurts. Now you're just seeing it more consistently. I mean, some guys, you can point a guy, Cornelius Bennett once said, you can point a guy, it was said of Cornelius Bennett, you can point a guy in the right direction. Some guys just get there faster than others.
Yeah.
And Willie Gay gets there faster than most. So, but the problem is, making sure he's pointing in the right
That's
direction,
right.
because if he's not, he's just getting himself further away from the play faster.
Right.
With that speed. But that's, he does seem to be, the game does, they say, slowing down for
yep.
someone. And I think the second year, a full year in the system, knowing what's required from him in that position, just the repetition, once it begins to just be about see it, react, athleticism.
Yeah.
I think he's a guy who you could easily peg as being a breakout guy on the defense this year.
And also, probably a friendly reminder for the Mizzou fans among us that I think Nick Bolton is a 2022 draft pick for the most part. He can play a part in the defense this year, but I expect him to look not 100% exactly the path of Willie Gay, because Bolton was in the middle of the defense more, and he had a longer and more sort of decorated collegiate career.
Yeah.
He probably has a little less ground to cover than Willie Gay does, but also we've seen, like, the Chiefs are comfortable doing that. Creed Humphrey was a pick for day one and beyond. I think Nick Bolton's role is probably going to be Anthony Hitchens' insurance and maybe a little bit of extra depth, and maybe situationally you find him in a few places. But as of right now, I would be surprised if he basically takes a starting spot from either Anthony Hitchens, which I think is a 10% chance that he does that, or even from Ben Neiman, which maybe there's a 25% chance. I think the smart money right now, though, is at least to not freak out if Bolton doesn't get on the field a ton.
But,
although, again, nice pick today, which
but
I want to talk about.
I think if he doesn't start, he at least, as a second-round pick, needs to see the field a lot in his rookie year. I get what you're saying about being an impact player a year from now, but if he's inactive for half the games and rarely sees the field in the other, that's a pick that needs some help for it to work out. I mean, he needs to make a big jump in year two. A second round pick should be starting by year two, and if he's barely seeing the field this year, that could be a problem. I suspect that he will see the field, because I don't think that the two guys in front of him are particularly dynamic players.
Agreed.
If he can't get playing time behind Anthony Hitchens at his age and Ben Neiman, that's an issue. And I don't expect that issue to continue very deep into the season.
I mean, there's also, again, injury notes here, but Willie Gay played 25% of the defensive snaps last year. Mm-hmm. I would probably take the over there for Bolton, but I don't think I would double it. I think it's less than half, and I think it's probably...
Sure.
Probably in that 30 or 40-ish sort of range there. One more quick thing from camp today, kind of interesting. Again, this is I don't want to come in and be like, let's talk about Chiefs camp. Here's all the things you should be worried about. But after a few excellent days of camp, it sounds like Noah Gray had one of the days that you occasionally will see from a rookie. There was a video shot of Nick Bolton's interception. And if you look at the screen, I tweeted both of the screen caps of this out on my Twitter account, at JB Briscoe. In fact, I can tweet it from the 810 Sports account, Sports Radio 810 account here in a second. But you will see the two frames. And one frame is Patrick Mahomes throwing a ball into a frame where no one is there yet. And then the next frame is Noah Gray turning, facing Patrick Mahomes, and then Nick Bolton flying off, catching the ball like 3 yards past where Noah Gray stopped and turned back to Mahomes. That we can't know for sure, but pretty confidently that it was probably not a Patrick Mahomes problem. Right. That was probably a Noah Gray problem. And it sounds like he had a couple of drops today as well. He's been great so far. Pads come on tomorrow. Please don't, again, make your sweeping judgments on Noah Gray right now. But we've seen a lot of good, a little bad. Wait until tomorrow to make your sweeping judgments, yes. And then you can either draft him in fantasy or suggest the Chiefs release him before ever actually getting to a preseason game. But also just something to keep an eye on and to see. Does he have another great practice? Does he have a little hangover from a rough one today? Just something to keep an eye on, because otherwise I would have had to have talked about Brad Keller's three innings over the last 20 minutes.
I want to do that.
And I did not want to do that. I'm Joshua Briscoe, filling in Forster and Petro here in the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
What a dumbass.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back into the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Did I start talking too soon, Jed? I'll let the music go. That's when I should have started. I'm Joshua Briscoe, filling in for Soren Petro today. Todd Lebo in the big chair tomorrow, alongside Curtis Siebel and Jed Marshall. Real quick, want to tell you about something coming up here in just about a week from now. It's on 810. It's the most important thing coming up here in 8 days. It is the 810 Listener Golf Tournament at Fred Arbonas Golf Course. Jed, you say it.
Fred Arbonas Golf Course?
Arbonas.
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 Flat A.
Arbonas. Well, hold on now, Curtis. Arbonas?
Yes.
Arbonas.
Arbonas.
Like a banister.
Like
make it yours, Josh.
Fred Arbonas Golf Course.
No.
Fred Arbonas Golf Course. Did I do it, Jed? That is coming up on 810. Here's the deal. Here's what you can do. The golf course, it doesn't matter how you pronounce it. It just matters how you play on it. And that's up to you. I'll pronounce it poorly. You can go play on it, hopefully well. If you want to register, you can do so at 810WHB.com. Here's the deal. Tickets are $108.10 per player. 10, 810. You get it. $108.10 per player. Here's what you get for it. You get the golf. You get a cart. You get the welcome bag. You get some drink tickets, breakfast, and lunch. Again, you can register for all that at 810WHB.com. It's 9 a.m. check-in on 810, a 10 a.m. shotgun start. It'll be a lot of fun out there. Tons of hole prizes and raffles. A whole bunch of us will be out there at various points in time. So that is on 810 coming up this next week. 810WHB.com if you would like to sign up to play on Fred. What golf course?
Arbonas.
Arbonas Golf Course, 810WHB.com. I told you there are a few interesting things that I thought came out of Chiefs camp today. The best audio provider we got was Eric Bieniemy, and there are a lot of interesting things going on in the on the offensive side of things for the Chiefs. And the most interesting thing I think right now has to be that young offensive line group, and that right now. Clearly storyline number one. Right now they're starting Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, and Lucas Niang at center, right guard, and right tackle. Three rookies. Now Niang is there because Mike Grimmers has been missing some time. Andrew Wiley worked in at right tackle as well. But Eric Bieniemy today, whenever he spoke to the media for the first time in a while, was asked about the young players across that young offensive line, which we'll get to in a second. Sorry, Jed. I was stalling. I wasn't totally sure where we were at. This never happens if Sarin is here. If Sarin is here, that doesn't happen. That's on me, and that I'll take the personal. And here's Eric Bieniemy on the OL.
I'm very excited about those young guys. Coach Heck is a hell of a coach. He does a great job of communicating. He's done a great job over the years of teaching. He has a way with those guys. Those guys are doing a good job. Are they right where we need them to be right now? No, but that's what training camp is for. In fact, you know, as bad, you know, as you hate to see mistakes made, it's almost good because now you can go out there and take a look at it on tape and have those guys learn from their mistakes. So right now, these guys are doing a heck of a job. They're learning the strain to finish. And when it's all said and done, what Coach Heck is doing an outstanding job of collectively getting those guys to learn how to play together.
I get the impression from listening to Eric Bieniemy today that there isn't a single person on the coaching staff that isn't doing a heck of a job.
That's true. Everyone's doing a heck of a job.
All the young players are not where they want them to be? No, but they're getting there, and they're working hard, and our coaches are doing a heck of a job.
I think learning to strain to the finish, I think, is what I think is what he said. I mean, that was a new Bieniemy-ism for me, I think.
Ironically, the only coach who is not doing a heck of a job is Andy Heck, who is doing a hell of a job.
Unbelievable. Yes. If, I'll tell you what.
He stopped in the middle of it.
Yes.
I think he heard it in his mind. Andy Heck is doing a hell of a job.
I'll tell you what.
He actually changed it to hell because he knew he was going to say heck.
At this rate, if the Chiefs ever hire a coach hell, Eric Bieniemy is going to describe him with an FCC violation. I'll tell you what, Coach Hell's out there doing a bleep of a job. Whoa, my bad.
But it does show Bieniemy's ability to think quickly.
Yes, quick on his feet.
Because he changed in the middle of a commitment. He switched it up. Nice work.
Also, per numerous reports from training camp today, Eric Bieniemy was fully out there with some of those profanities. What is that from? What is? I think it's from a Vine.
I saw numerous tweets about. Well, okay, we know Eric Bieniemy's fired up.
We knew this already. Here's my argument really quick on taking your kids to training camp and being near Eric Bieniemy running the offense. If you are, you know, a parent that doesn't necessarily want your kids to talk like they work on radio or whatever, that's fine. But I would make the argument that where better to hear some of those words used with appropriate power than when Eric Bieniemy is using them while yelling at the members of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh, yeah.
The fly is still in the studio. I thought we got it out last segment. We certainly did not.
He's hanging around. That fly is doing a heck of a job.
Flying around.
Now is that fly where I want him to be?
No, absolutely not, because I want him to be outside.
But I'd like him to be outside. But that fly is doing a heck of a job, and I think he's going to keep pushing to the end. At the end of the day, that fly is going to be outside at some point.
He's flying around, buzzing around, doing everything we ask him to do, except we'd like to get him outside a little bit more. Absolutely we would. He knows that. We know that. We're putting it on tape. I also think Bieniemy there in the segment after we just sort of explained where I think Spags spends a lot of his time vis-a-vis letting the veterans have the inside track. Eric Bieniemy, I think, makes the argument there for let young guys make mistakes in training camp.
Mm-hmm.
Look, man, if I saw a tweet, I can't remember who it's from, so sorry to whoever it was from St. Joe tweeted this, but somebody tweeted that Frank Clark worked Lucas Niang at one point. Fine.
I would hope so.
Fine. First of all, yes, I would hope so.
If Lucas Niang is stonewalling Frank Clark in camp, that may be a problem.
I think it would be. But if Lucas Niang is going to get worked by Frank Clark before you even have real pads on in St. Joe.
Sure.
And hopefully you figure it out before you end up being forced into action in the Super Bowl or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doesn't bother me one bit. One guy that I do have higher goals for and do hope that the Chiefs have higher goals for as well, as Eric Bieniemy seems to hear, is Mecole Hardman. Eric Bieniemy was asked what he's seen from Hardman in what is going to be a very important camp for the third-year receiver.
You know what? Mecole has done a great job of coming back to camp in shape like he always does, but you're still seeing that explosive power. He's working on his releases, and he's just fine-tuning the little things. We're excited about him. Not only are we excited about him, but also, too, you got Mecole. He knows he has Pringle on his back, D-Rob, a number of guys, Cornell, Callaway, and, I mean, the list continues. But Mecole is doing a heck of a job. He's working hard, and he's working on the details to help him to improve. Each and every day.
First impression today that Willie got, was that a wrong route or a bad ball?
Which one? I'm sorry.
The first interception, the one that was kind of over the middle, a little bit on the left. Mm-hmm. There.
Put it this way, in my opinion, from what I remember, it was just a poorly executed play. We need to execute better.
But why was it a poorly executed play, Coach?
Was it
because Mecole Hardman, who's working on routes and details, wasn't in the right spot? Or is it because a man who almost never throws a bad pass threw a bad pass?
In the clip that I saw today, looked like the former. So there were two things there
that I
thought
were interesting. What's wrong with saying that?
That's one of them.
What is wrong with just saying, yeah, he was in the wrong spot and he needs to do a better job at that?
Because you don't want to, right? You don't want to throw somebody under the bus.
How's that throwing someone under the
bus? But I don't think that is. That's the thing, you don't want to throw somebody under the bus or call attention to someone's mistake if you can just keep it moving. I think if Bieniemy would have stopped mid after the play, would have stopped the offense and went and gone over and chewed out Mecole Hardman in front of him,
grabbed him by his face mask and hauled him across the field,
that would have not been great. But to say, he wasn't where he's supposed to be, and but also, if you're listening closely, Eric Bieniemy can say that and say also what he needs to say.
He loves up guys plenty
I agree with you.
Enough to allow him in that moment to say, yeah, he was in the wrong spot.
The other thing from that interaction.
I think Patrick Mahomes is okay to say Pat threw a bad ball.
That's true, too. I think he would rather have said Pat threw a bad ball there. Honestly, if that would have been the case, he might have. He might have said Pat missed him because I don't think that any of that's going to stick to Mahomes. The other thing, though, from that clip that I thought was interesting, that maybe we got just a little bit of a snippet of useful information, is when he was talking about Hardman, Bienemy says, you know, he's got Pringle and D-Rob and Powell and Callaway on his back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on his back is behind him. I'm doing some 4D chess here. I've got the red yarn all over the corkboard, but I do think that Bienemy is sort of saying in there, like, hey, he doesn't have to step over DeMarcus Robinson. He has to keep DeMarcus Robinson behind him. So as we've kind of had some of these speculative conversations about who's actually the second receiver, who's going to try to get some of that Sammy Watkins role, they're going to try to let it be Hardman, and I think if Robinson wins that job, it will have been him winning it over Hardman, or Hardman letting it slip through his fingers with Hardman having the inside track.
If Hardman doesn't win that job, I mean, if it's anybody but Mecole Hardman, then it's a job Mecole Hardman lost.
Yeah, agreed. And that would be a tough look in year three.
Which is bad.
It's not great in year one, it's not great in year two, but in year three, when you've let one of your top free agents who just left was a wide receiver, and they did not add anybody substantive to the wide receiver room, that's a bad look.
Yeah, I'm not jazzed if I'm a Chiefs fan that a guy entering his third training camp is still working on details.
Yeah,
I mean, I know last year was weird, but if you're going to be the wide receiver who doesn't work out with your quarterback in the offseason, then details should not be something you need a lot of attention to in your third training camp.
I would think so, or hope so, and we'll find out. I'm hopeful without being delusional, I think, about Hardman. Hopeful.
He's a guy that has the skill to be a breakout guy.
Absolutely.
He just has to be in the right spot and know what he's doing.
And I think to some extent he's one of those post hype sleepers where last year was when all the hype was there, and this year might be his better situation. Yeah. But you still have to take advantage of that situation when it does arrive. Also from Eric Bieniemy, we mentioned a couple of the rookies already. Again, Noah Gray seemed to have a bit of a tougher day at practice after having overall a good camp so far. And then also Cornell Powell, another rookie in terms of all of the Chiefs pass catchers. Bieniemy was asked what he's seeing from Gray and Powell so far.
You know what? Those guys are working hard every day. They're doing a hell of a job. Are they right where we need them to be? Not quite. But I will say this. Every day I'm seeing them improve upon something. Now, are they making mistakes? Yes. Mistakes happen. And like I said, you want to encourage them, because when they do make a mistake, it's not about that particular play. It's what are they going to do the next time they have an opportunity to get out there. So the good thing is that both those guys are working their tails off. They've found a way to make plays each and every day. And so the thing that we want them to do is just to continue to strive to be at their best.
Is there an echo in there? That was if he would have just mentioned Andy Heck, that would have been indiscernible from the first clip.
So I said that. Are they where we want them to be? No.
I had to look to make sure that I didn't accidentally press number two, play number two again.
That's why I mentioned that the first time.
It is a almost perfect echo of one to the other. That's awesome. Wow.
And we're going to keep asking questions and answering them in my answers? Yes.
Yes. Yes, I am. Wow. Fantastic. Curtis, why don't you pick for him? Let's do one more piece of sound here. Do you want to hear about Eric Bieniemy on Clyde Edwards-Helaire or Eric Bieniemy on Tyreek Hill versus Usain Bolt? His Usain Bolt answer was kind of fun.
It was fun.
Let's do that.
Let's
do that. Here's Eric Bieniemy. If you didn't hear, Tyreek Hill wants to race Usain Bolt. I think he's admitted that he would give Bolt the 100 meter, but he thinks he'd win a 40-yard dash. Eric Bieniemy, he did his own handicapping of a potential Tyreek Hill versus Usain Bolt race.
Listen, I'm not getting into that. If he wants to race him, you know, so be it. I don't know when that's going to take place. It'll probably take place sometime next offseason, but I'll be curious to see Usain Bolt run. Now, here's the thing. I truly believe that Tyreek can run. When we start talking about these legends, I'm going to err on the legend. And I love Tyreek, okay? But I'm going to err on the Olympic gold medalist, you know what I mean? And that's not to say I don't love him, you know what I mean? I love Tyreek, but I'm going to err on the legend.
My favorite part of that is that the first 2 seconds of the audio, him going, I'm not going to talk about that, and then talking about it for 30 seconds. I was, because there's no reason to deflect that one. And he leaned into it a little bit. Curtis, Usain Bolt versus...
But now he has to run against Marcel Jacobs, who won the gold medal last night for Italy.
This is part of the bet here. Usain Bolt is 34 years old. 40-yard dash, and also Usain Bolt is 6'5". Yeah. Tyreek Hill is not. Usain Bolt, Tyreek Hill, 40-yard dash right now. Who do you got? 34 years old makes it a...
I would give Tyreek Hill a decent shot at 40.
I agree.
Any distance beyond that, no. And 100, absolutely not. I mean, I would give him... I think I would give him a decent shot at the... Usain Bolt now, maybe not the 2008.
Yeah, not prime, but 34-year-old, I think.
I'd give Tyreek Hill a puncher's chance in the 40.
I also don't care about any of the Bleacher Report, races that in separate places where they just time it over. I would actually watch Usain Bolt and Tyreek Hill just like on a track. That one would be worth tuning in on. This is the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's brought to you by Worth Harley Davidson. Why the hell not? You're worth it. Learned that was a pun on Friday. They're at I-29, just south of the airport. I'm not Surin Petro. I am Josh Abriscoe, filling in for Surin today. More of the program whenever we come back.
The program with Surin Petro.
It wouldn't stay up. It would stay down. Yeah. It never froze in the up position.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Program rolling on here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Josh Abriscoe, filling in for Surin Petro. Just a little bit of time before 3 o'clock when we have the feud with Todd Lebo. I've not played the feud with Lebo before, and I am incredibly excited for that. So that's coming up, and then we'll have some sounds from Lebo in the 3 o'clock hour. Also should mention, we got our 2-minute drill at 4, and then we'll talk to Matt Snyder of CBS Sports down in the 5 o'clock about some of the things going on around the baseball world, specifically to the Royals. I told you I was bored by yesterday's Royals game, but I do still care about some of the processes going on there, so excited to talk to Matt a little bit into the 5 o'clock hour. Real quick, a couple people on hold. I got to keep it relatively short, but we'll try to get to you both here. Jazzu J, you're in the program.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. Just wanted to ask you, as it relates to every year, it seems like Jody Fortson is a training camp sweetheart,
yes,
more or less, and you hear these great things he's doing. Even, I believe, Nate Taylor has, with The Athletic, has said he's just been spectacular in camp. What does he have to do to make the team? Because I feel like I know what I've got in D-Rob and Kemp, and frankly, I don't know what to admit. I think I got a pretty good idea. We know what we have in Mecole Hardman. Mm-hmm. At some point, don't you have to give Fortson a shot if he's looking this spectacular? And just kind of your thoughts, and maybe we'll see him in a Chiefs roster this year.
Appreciate the call and the question, because I have been asking a very similar one for a while now. I don't know the answer. He's working with the tight ends again. He's kind of done a tight end receiver back to tight end path. Every single report from Nate and otherwise has been, he has been incredible out there. But I feel like that has been the case for the last, I think he's in his third training camp now. He has the size. It seems like he has the tools. I don't know what else they're asking for, though, from Jody Fortson, because I would love to see him actually in a starting line, or just in a rotation, really. And the Chiefs keep bringing him back, so that they clearly see there's something there. They're not going to just keep bringing him back just for the fun of it. So I am relatively hopeful, but I do not have a good answer for that question, because I've been asking it myself for a while. Real quick, Jeremy, you're in the program.
Hey, Josh. This is just a question that I've been kind of bouncing around in my head with Sorensen's presumed COVID status.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think that in a bigger scheme plays out when it comes to, let's say Thornhill is vaccinated but Sorensen's not? Do you think that it all comes down to play on the field, or do you think that is, a factor at some point when you're talking about safety of the team and all of that kind of thing over the long haul?
Good question. Appreciate it, Jeremy. I think for the most part, the starting lineup will be solely whatever they want the starting lineup to be. I don't think it will come into effect there, unless, of course, Sorensen ends up in the COVID protocol. That would be the way that it would do it on the field. I do think it's going to have a bigger impact for some of the bubble guys, for some of the reasons that I think Jeremy was trying to get at there a little bit, of like, hey, you can not only be unavailable, we see guys get released who are injury, more injury prone than others all the time, but also what that might mean mean for the rest of your team? Could you be endangering teammates or endangering their playing time as well? I think that's going to be more of a thing around the bubble, though, and also with the Chiefs being over the 90% threshold, they've said that for the unvaccinated players, the small handful of them, presumably including Sorensen, they have a lot of other safety protocols still in place. So for the Chiefs' perspective, I still think having 90-plus percent of your team vaccinated maybe makes it even a little easier to accommodate the smaller percentage that hasn't been yet. Whenever we come back, it's The Feud. It's Todd Lebo next here in the program.
Time for our Deli Fresh End of the Hour question. Sponsored by Good Sense. Chosen by KC sandwich lovers for 30 years. Good Sense. Not because it's easy, but because it's better.
All right, the Rangers have had walk-off home runs in back-to-back games. Who were the hitters the last time the Royals had walk-off homers in back-to-back games? Brought to you by Good Sense.